Thank you for downloading this Council on Foreign Relations podcast. CFR is an independent national membership organization and nonpartisan research center. For more information, please visit us online at cfr.org.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this Council on Foreign Relations On the Record media call. I am cfr.org editor Robert McMahon, and the subject of this call is what is now being widely referred to as the Sony hack and what the international repercussions are. U.S. officials have accused North Korea of mounting the attack to counter the release of the pending Sony movie, The Interview. North Korean officials have denied the accusation. We have two CFR experts on hand who are very well positioned to help us understand the issues here. Adam Siegel is CFR Senior Fellow for China Studies and author of the newly launched Net Politics blog, where he has been tracking cybersecurity issues regularly. Scott Snyder is CFR Senior Fellow for Korea Studies. He also has a blog he regularly contributes to, that is CFR's Asia Unbound, and he has been examining developments in North Korea surrounding the latest incident. I'm going to speak to both Adam and Scott for about 15 or 20 minutes and then open up this call for your questions. I wanted to start with Adam. Adam, can you talk a little bit about the capacity of North Korea to mount the attack it's accused of in terms of, of maybe a training of some sort of cyber elite force, what its infrastructure is, and so forth?
Sure. There isn't a huge amount of clarity about capabilities, but we've generally seen what we believe is improving capabilities over the last 3 to 5 years. When you look at previous attacks that were ascribed to North Korea in 2009 and 2011, they tended to be more attacks of mass disruption, DDoS attacks on South Korean and U.S. websites. And then beginning in 2013, we began to see some more sophisticated attacks that caused damage to data and to internal operations of banks and telecoms in South Korea. We do know a little from some North Korean defectors that there are some elite cyber units. The total forces are estimated somewhere between 3 and 5,000. But we don't know very much about doctrine or how they train. And the Sony attacks, they seem to have repurposed a lot of malware we have seen previously before.
And there's been a bit of discussion about its capacity vis-a-vis China or its reliance on China. Can you talk a little bit about China's role or the role just of the physical infrastructure of China assisting North Korea's functioning of its internet?
So the North Koreans go through China for their internet access, and the internet provider is a joint venture with a Thai company that then contracts with China Unicom. On the attack side, there is reporting that some of the North Korean cyber units are located in Shenyang and mount attacks from there. And there's been discussions about training agreements between North Korea and Iran and North Korea and China, although there's not any great deal of evidence about it. As the Times and other have reported, the U.S. has turned to China, hoping that they'll put some pressure on North Korea and perhaps block or filter attacks coming from North Korea. The Chinese statement originally was not particularly promising. They basically voiced their usual criticism of cyber attacks, but then said there wasn't enough evidence that the attacks came from North Korea. They did supposedly today or yesterday suggest that they would investigate the attacks themselves. And there is some small, I think, glimmer of hope in some of the statements that came from the Foreign Ministry about how they oppose third parties using other countries as a site for attacks, which seems to me to be a reference to North Korea.
So one more for you, Adam. And President Obama has said that the U.S. will take a proportional response. There are some reports coming in just before we started this call about disruptions to North Korea's internet. Is this the type of response one might see to this type of proportional response one might see?
I think we'll have to wait and see. It's too early to tell. It could be the South Koreans kind of pulling into their shell. The North Koreans pulling into their shell to prevent an attack on themselves. We know in 2013 something similar happened. The North Korean internet went down for a couple of days, and the North Koreans did blame the U.S. And South Korea for it. I saw the State Department today said that the response, some of them people would see and some would not be visible to us. So it strikes me that this would be a proportional attack, although not very sophisticated and not very long-standing effects.
Thanks. Now Scott, I'm interested in drilling down a little bit on why, if this is North Korea, then as it stands accused, why would it be moved to respond so vigorously to this particular movie? And you blogged on this just a few days ago, mentioning that North Korea, you said, quote, North Korea suspects the U.S. government is orchestrating an insidious policy through Hollywood of pointing and laughing at the Kim regime. And then you flesh it out further. Can you talk a little bit about the internal dynamics in Pyongyang at the moment?
Sure. We actually just passed the third anniversary of Kim Jong-il's death, and that means that the young leader, Kim Jong-un, has been there for 3 years. In a North Korean context, the three-year point is significant in terms of moving past a mourning period to a period of much more active rule. We certainly saw that in the 1990s with his father. I think that there are some trends under Kim Jong-un that are notable compared to his father, and one is a much greater sensitivity on the part of North Korea to external critiques. I think we can see that both through the way that of the leadership, and we can see that both through the way that they've responded to this movie and through the fact that they have responded quite actively and vigorously to this UN Commission of Inquiry on North Korean human rights. They've really moved into diplomatic overdrive this past fall, trying to defend against that. Second, I think that the volume and intensity of threats from North Korea in response to perceived opposition from the international community has been much more vigorously expressed under Kim Jong-un. And interestingly, this is a regime that best survives in isolation, but now it's increasingly interconnected. And so, there's a sense in which North Korea both can be penetrated by, and now we've seen can reach out beyond its borders. And so I think that's a new feature that is really illustrated by this particular incident.
Now, is there anything you can say about this group known as Guardians of Peace, which is supposed to be responsible for stealing the huge volume of Sony Pictures emails and these threats about threats to the safety of those who might see the film before its release was canceled?
Yeah, well, the North Koreans have distanced themselves from the Guardians of Peace at the same time that they've praised the actions of the group. I really don't know anything more about the group itself. But I do find it interesting that the North Koreans continue to use this ambiguity of attribution, which is one of the things that they used back in 2010 in response to another set of provocations, the sinking of a South Korean vessel. And that, I think, did help to blunt some of the effect from any kind of response that would be designed to punish North Korea.
Got it. Adam, I wanted to ask a broader question about the repercussions for this case. It certainly sent a chill through large corporations, seeing the extent to which their mail could be hacked, plundered, and so forth. But there's all sorts of security issues here, and national security issues, obviously. A lot of U.S. critical infrastructure is in private sector hands, actually. Could you talk a little bit about how this incident has been, what the reaction has been, and what some of the responses that might be underway or might be mulled?
Well, you can see it raises a lot of the ambiguities and problems of how you deal with cyber events, right? So we can see there's a debate over what the event actually is, the cyber attack actually is. And so, you know, as you mentioned, the president called it an act of cyber vandalism, but you know, Senator McCain came out strongly and said that the president didn't understand that this was a new type of warfare. So what language are we using for this? Is this cyber war? Is this cyber vandalism, cyber disruption, something else like that, which in many ways decides what type of policy response you're talking about. War has a certain set of institutional legal frameworks that come into place. Then, as you said, the question about what role the U.S. government should play in defending the private sector. It seems fairly clear on the area of critical infrastructure, and that generally is defined as the telecoms and energy and transportation and other sectors like that. Movies generally are not seen as critical infrastructure. So would the U.S. government have some responsibility to defend the private sector? And we've seen this come up with cyber espionage as well, threats to the health of the U.S. economy. But also the president has framed this as a question about freedom of speech and another country intimidating or trying to exert influence over what Americans can or cannot watch. So all of these have kind of different policy responses and involve different institutions. And there aren't any very clear answers because the borders are so very blurred.
And you mentioned earlier the intersection of China and North Korea. Obviously, on a separate note, that you know, the U.S. and China have an ongoing, intensifying relationship over cybersecurity, and there have been some tensions over that as well. Can you talk a little bit more about China as an actor in this field, separate from North Korea at the moment, but also how the China-U.S. relationship is evolving, or if it's evolving at all?
Well, part of the problem with the U.S. of asking for China's help right now is that we, you know, aren't really talking to each other about cyber. There was a cybersecurity working group, but that was suspended after the U.S. indicted the five PLA hackers this year for conducting cyber espionage. The Chinese have basically said that they're waiting for the United States to conduct the next move, to make the next moves to restart the negotiations or discussions. The discussions were at the beginning stages, and they were kind of a very initial efforts to start defining some of the rules of the road for cyber. What types of attacks might be considered the use of armed force or an armed attack? Are there certain targets that should be off limits, the financial system or health systems or other things like that? And these are
so rules of the road. So establishing rules of the road for basic rules of the road for cyber behavior.
For cyber behavior, for state action in cyberspace.
Right.
And so these would be very important, especially when we see the Chinese seem to be mapping, along with the Russians and others, seem to be mapping U.S. critical infrastructure possibly for future attacks. So is that mapping itself an act of war? How do we consider it? And also, you know, there could be a great deal of misperception that arises if attacks start happening, and how would we discuss or communicate with the counterparts in China about what the attacks mean? So those are all things that need to happen, and the U.S. has tried to restart those conversations. The president brought up cyber espionage and cybersecurity with President Xi Jinping when he saw him in his last trip. But so far, the Chinese really haven't been very interested in restarting.
Okay, and Scott, on the question of North Korea's capabilities and the attention North Korea has gotten to date from major world powers, I mean, it's been focused on its nuclear program. The six-party talks have been pretty dormant, but there has continued to be an interest in getting back to the table by some major actors to try to talk about the denuclearization of North Korea. Now, with the potential reach in cyber actions like this, cyber attacks, this kind of raises the capacity for North Korea. And here's an actor that's not afraid to kind of try outrageous things by all accounts. Can you talk a little bit about what this might mean for North Korea's actions on the world stage, or maybe a new sense of a willingness and a sense that it can attack in places that it couldn't before?
Yeah, I think this issue of North Korea developing new capabilities, actually in three areas, nuclear, missile development, and cyber, these are all issues that currently there's really not a diplomatic process by which to try to address them. The stalling of the six-party talks is evidence of the really unwillingness of the North Koreans to come back to those talks. The issue of cyber is now, you know, new front and center, but it's in a political environment where I think it's going to be even harder to imagine that there could be an effective dialogue to address these issues. Certainly, the mood in the U.S. public and in Congress is going to make it harder to imagine that there could be space for diplomatic interaction on this set of issues.
Well, thanks to both of you for teeing up these issues. I want to open the call now to those on the line. Operator, could you tell me if there's any questions at this point? This is, by the way, this is a CFR on the record media call on the issue of the cyber attack on Sony.
Yes, thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. Again, to ask a question, please press star one. Our first question comes from Carolyn Presutti with Voice of America.
Hi, I have a question for Scott Snyder. In your December 17th article, you say that we do have the necessity to defer future attacks, and it's essential that we do something in response to this. What are your suggestions? I've heard why, but I haven't heard any specifics. And I'm wondering also, and Mr. Siegel, if you want to chime in too, I'm wondering what you think about the idea to give diplomats persona non grata at the UN or stopping North Korean ships.
I think the way that President Obama has laid this out really has been trying to focus on a mean, the idea of a proportionate response that doesn't necessarily lead to some kind of full-scale military conflict, but while also finding a way to punish North Korea for this activity. And a lot of this is, I think, new ground. I would suggest that the response has to be something that treats the issue as more than maybe, you know, as the president called it, cyber vandalism. But at the same time, if we look at the way the North Koreans are responding, even though the U.S. is trying to maintain some kind of control of escalation by signaling a proportionate response, you know, the North Korean response has been one that talks about the toughest counteraction, suggesting that North Koreans might prefer at least rhetorically to escalate. You know, we don't know exactly what is causing the problems with the North Korean internet today. I would suggest that if that is something that the U.S. was behind, then that, you know, would be one way of fulfilling the president's suggestion that the U.S. would respond at a time and place of its choosing. I can imagine the mobilization of a coalition of the willing on cybersecurity protection that could maybe be modeled after the Proliferation Security Initiative. That might be an idea. Certainly in Congress, I think there's going to be pressure to move forward with the resolution that the House has already passed to essentially bring the level of North Korean financial sanctions up to the level that we currently have on Iran.
And Adam, did you want to jump in?
I'll just echo Scott. I think that proportional would actually probably limit to cyber attacks. And most of those we won't see. I do think there is going to be a concern that we probably have some limited capabilities within the North Korean system, through these implants that seem to have been revealed by the Snowden revelations, and that any action we will take will not want to kind of put those at risk.
So movement against North Korean diplomats not be covered under that proportional response?
I mean, it depends, I guess. It, you know, with given that the Chinese indicted five specific PLA hackers, I guess if they could, if they were willing to identify the specific hackers behind the attacks, then that might be an equivalent.
Let me mention one more issue, the idea of putting North Korea back on the terrorism list, which I think that the administration has already signaled that it's considering. You know, maybe we need a cyber terrorism list that is separate from the broader terrorism list and a set of sanctions that go along with being on that list.
Thank you. Operator, is there another question, please?
Yes, our next question comes from Donald Kirk, and he is an independent.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I'm just wondering how much support the North Korean cyber warriors had from sympathizers in the U.S. among the Korean-American community. Is some indication that they had outside support, not counting China, there's some reports that actually they had support within the U.S. In this. I wonder how much credence you place in this and how serious an issue this might be.
Adam, you want to take that?
There was some initial reporting that there was that they received some help from inside of Sony. I haven't seen how that investigation is going. I haven't seen anything in particular about ethnic Koreans in the United States. You know, the U.S. has said that North Korea is centrally involved, but we don't really know, you know, where, if it was Korean elite hackers, you know, Unit 121 hackers involved, or if perhaps these were freelance hackers that were contracting to the North Korean government, were inside the Sony systems, and decided to do some damage for North Korea. So all of those things haven't been answered by this designation of centrally involved.
Thank you for that question. Operator, do we have another question, please?
Yes, again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Corey Bennett with The Hill newspaper.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing the call today. Excuse me there. I know that there have been reports, as you briefly mentioned earlier, about North Korea working potentially with the Russians on some of their cyber capabilities, either through training exercises or exchange of malware. I know the U.S. has this cyber working group with Russia that, from my understanding, is largely stalled at this point, particularly considering the ongoing actions in Ukraine. I was just wondering if you guys knew anything about the status of the U.S. working group with Russia on cyber issues, and if that had any potential of being a forum to work kind of on these broader issues with China and North Korea?
The latest I heard, Corey, is that it is stalled, that it has been on hold. I think that's a great point. I think, you know, part of the problem the U.S. has right now is that, you know, we're not having discussions with China or Russia. And both of those countries might be able to exert some influence on North Korea. I think, you know, we have tried to involve the Russians in many of the same discussions in the Chinese, like a lot of this discussions about thresholds and proportionality and potential targets. I think, you know, a lot of the malware markets, as you know, tend to be black market. You know, the U.S. has signaled some interest in working on controlling that as well, but I haven't seen much take up of that topic on the Chinese or Russian side.
Scott, did you want to add anything to that?
No.
Okay. Operator, do we have any other questions at this point?
Yes, we have a question coming from Prang Yu with Epoch Time newspaper.
Hi, my name is Ping. I'm from Epoch Time newspaper. I have a question because I saw a lot of news U.S. actually asked for help from the China to help to clear this issue out with North Korea. Because I know there's a lot of issue for cyber attack between U.S. and China. Do you think China will really help U.S. for the cyber attack from North Korea?
So, Adam, we talked about this a little bit before. You want to talk a little bit more about U.S.-China collaboration at all?
Yeah, I don't think it's very likely in this case, although, as I mentioned, I think that there are two kind of glimmers of hope. The first is that Bloomberg was reporting that a Chinese official said that the Chinese will investigate the tax themselves and then get back to the U.S. about this. Maybe it's a stalling effort and they may come up with nothing, but that is a positive signal. I also thought that in the Chinese Foreign Ministry's statement about opposing using someone else's territory for an attack on a third party was a signal to North Korea. But the Chinese are not particularly eager to be working with us on these issues, given both the U.S. claims about cyber espionage from the Chinese side and the Chinese criticism of the U.S. after the Snowden revelations. So I'm not expecting this to go very far.
Scott, just follow up on that. Please, go ahead.
I just want to say I'm not any more optimistic than Adam, but I do want to note that in past North Korean provocations on the peninsula, conventional or missile and nuclear, usually what we've seen is a pulling together among the U.S. and Japan and South Korea in an attempt to put more pressure on China to rein in North Korea. And in this case, it's interesting to contemplate that we have this early offer for cooperation between the U.S. and China. And that's very different from, I think, the way that these issues have been responded to in the past. And so I would hope that the Chinese would also consider that the U.S. is handling this issue a little bit differently.
Well, in the past provocations that you mentioned, Scott, there have actually been some instances even of Chinese exasperation, it seems like, towards the North Koreans. And concern about their, them going too far in terms of things like nuclear tests and so forth. So there is a little bit of that. But do we know anything about with Kim Jong-un's leadership and the Chinese leadership now consolidating? Did we know anything about the extent of contacts between them at this point? Anything different to note?
It's a pretty rocky relationship, I think, right now between China and North Korea. I think it's been reported recently that the Russians have invited Kim Jong-un to visit Moscow for some celebrations of the end of World War II that are going to be held next spring. Historically, the North Korean leader has really gone to China first in recent years. So I think that's further evidence of the fact that the North Koreans would like to diversify their contacts and maybe reduce their reliance on China.
Thanks, Scott. And just a reminder to those on the call, this is a CFR on-the-record media call on the cyber attack on Sony, and we're talking with CFR senior fellows Adam Siegel and Scott Snyder about the implications of what is known as the Sony hack. Operator, do we have any other questions on the line at this point?
Yes, we have a question from Corey Bennett with The Hill newspaper.
Hi, guys. One other question. A large part of the Sony hack was not just the violent threats that we saw, but also the emails that were released, this kind of ongoing campaign to roll out potentially embarrassing emails. I'm wondering if you guys think that we might see from nation states like North Korea or Iran or others attempts to conduct similar campaigns on government agencies, government officials, perhaps even lawmakers specifically, where they're going after more kind of embarrassing things as opposed to destructive attacks, which is what we tend to think about and worry about as a threat. But do you expect to see more of these kind of email leaks or just embarrassing campaigns coming up next year from people like North Korea and other nation states?
Adam, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, I expect that doxing will still remain the kind of purview of hacktivist groups like WolfSec mm-hmm. and Anonymous. I mean, I think, again, in this case, it's unclear to me, right, if they release the private information in part to draw, to get the press involved in the story and to build pressure on Sony And then, you know, because perhaps the destructive attack alone would have not been enough, but if they created a large enough kind of storm around the movie that they could then, you know, peel away anyone who might support Sony publicly, alienate them from their friends, and do other doses like that. I guess it'll depend upon what the interest of the attackers is, what are they trying to achieve. So I guess, you know, in the case of that they are trying to perhaps change a public policy or change the public narrative, that they may see this as a very successful way of moving forward.
Thanks for that question. Operator, do we have another question, please?
We will now turn the call over to the presider.
Okay, I'm going to actually step in with another question I had, which is sort of right around the time that we were taping this, or we're holding this call, the UN Security Council was planned to be convening a session on North Korea's human rights record. And Scott, I wanted to ask you, obviously separate issues, but you know, some crossover sentiments, I guess, about North Korea's behavior on the world stage and observance of norms and so forth. Can you talk a little bit about the significance of this UN Security Council session on North Korea's human rights record and to what extent it feeds into perhaps the country's own reactions at this point?
Yeah, I think where these two issues intersect is in North Korea's perception that both actions constitute direct attacks on the reputation of the leader, and in particular the UN Security Council today will be discussing a set of recommendations from the Commission of Inquiry that include a recommendation that Kim Jong-un be named as defendant at the International Criminal Court. And it's pretty clear from the North Korean maneuvering over the course of the past a few weeks and months in New York that is an outcome that they really very much wanted to avoid. And so I do think that that is a direct link. We're seeing, on the one hand, that aspersions against the North Korean leader can evoke some pretty strong rhetoric and negative reactions from North Korea. But on the other hand, in the case of the human rights resolution, it has also moved and motivated the North Koreans in ways that very few issues have.
Do you think this is an opportunity for, you know, the U.S. to use this public platform to you know, perhaps broaden the issue, or is it not likely to happen in terms of dealing with human rights, but maybe adding an issue of you know, sort of cyber abuses to this discussion today?
I think that the Security Council discussion is probably going to be confined to the human rights issue, simply because the maneuvering around the human rights issue has been going on for months, and this cyber issue is relatively new. It may come up in side conversations, but I don't think that it will be the focal point of the official discussion at the Security Council. Given that the Security Council is really considering the Commission of Inquiry recommendations that were made to the Security Council as a result of a UN General Assembly vote.
Got it. And Adam, I was just wondering from your perspective on, you know, U.S. responses, and you made reference to you know, great pains to follow proportional response. You know, are there other U.S. options then that could be considered at this point that might be effective? Considered, obviously not acted on yet, but maybe considered that weren't considered previously, given this that we're in new territory here.
You know, the range of options that people have mentioned is, you know, not only I think they're focused on how do you how would you in some ways send the message or hurt the North Korean elite that these types of actions are not permissible, and so you see I think a range of kind of information operations or information warfare that, you know, would you target specific computers of of high level officials and perhaps encrypt them or wipe them clean, so that person, you know, can see that the U.S. can reach out and touch them. You know, others have talked about balloon drops of the movie itself into North Korea, or other efforts of spreading the message. But I think, you know, once you think of this as a type of conflict that's not war, but it's clearly one that the U.S. has to deter, then it opens up a whole range of actions. I think most of them are going to be kind of beyond the visibility of the U.S. public.
Got it. Thank you. Operator, do we have another question on the line, please?
Yes, we do. We have a question from Joseph Marks with Politico.
Hi. Thanks for taking time to speak with us today. So in the context, I joined the call a little bit late, but there are reports that the North Korean internet may be broadly out today or much more limited than it normally is, such as it exists. And Adam, I was wondering if you can talk about, might that be one of the things we don't see, we do see? How would that fit into a proportional U.S. response if it is indeed something that comes from the U.S.?
Yeah, so I think both Scott and I thought it would be the type of proportional response you could expect to see. I don't think either of us want to speculate that this, in fact, is what's happening, because, you know, it could be the North Koreans doing this, pulling off the internet for a little bit in a kind of in a defensive crouch to prevent future attacks. I did note that this happened in 2013 and after the Dark Seoul attacks, and the North Korean internet suffered a similar kind of outage, which the North Koreans did blame on the U.S. and the ROK. If it were the U.S., it would be a fairly, you know, broad attack and not particularly sophisticated. It might, you know, send some message and not have particularly escalatory implications, and so, you know, it might be a good first step.
Thanks for that question. Operators, another question, please?
No, sir, we can turn it over to the presider.
I had one more follow-up to that, actually, Adam, which was, could you talk a little bit about, to the extent you can, the U.S. capability to mount, you know, sort of cyber counterattacks or the basics of the U.S. Cybersecurity infrastructure and how vigorous it is, or what are the plans afoot to try to strengthen it and so forth. But can you give kind of a general sense of U.S. cybersecurity apparatus as it exists right now on a federal level?
Well, I don't think it's a question necessarily of capabilities, although the issue with North Korea would be targets, right? What it is connected and given how tightly controlled the North Korean internet is, could we get access to them? But the larger question, I think, would be legal, and who has the authority to conduct what? You know, we do know from some of the Snowden revelations that, you know, the U.S. has been trying to conduct operations against North Korea along with China, Russia, and Iran. There's, you know, we don't know how successful that's been and you know, how much presence the U.S. has on North Korean networks. But the issue on what types of attacks and who has the ability to conduct them is, I think, would have to be decided from what we can tell at the presidential level. If this was going to be an offensive operation, the president would have to decide. And so, you know, I think those are the two big questions: what it is that's connected in North Korea that we could actually have some effect on, and under what legal authorities would they be exerted on?
And then, as you referenced before, there's still this kind of ongoing effort to create an international understanding about norms in cyberspace. But potentially, I would say maybe there's some kind of international chance to build some international infrastructure or some sort of sense of shared international resources on dealing with cyber threats that maybe would affect most, you know, major law-abiding nations.
Yeah, and you can see the White House and the administration doing that, right, in their response, right? I think that Obama saying that this is vandalism and not cyber war is in part a kind of signaling on the norms and what we think these types of actions are. His, you know, constant refrain about the response being proportionate is clearly a part of building that norm. I think the State Department has gone to Japan, South Korea, and Canada and UK and other and others of our friends and said, you know, we'd like you to criticize the attack on these terms. And so to try and define attacks on private sector companies as being beyond the pale and not responsible behavior in cyberspace.
Thanks, Adam. Scott, I wanted to ask you about North Korea in terms of what approaches have worked or have been somewhat effective in the past to their behavior. And this is obviously mostly in the past in response to the development of their nuclear program and tests, and ballistic missile tests, and so forth. They have, you know, withstood sanctions and all sorts of condemnation, and obviously again are going to face some today in the UN Security Council. But to what extent have or what types of efforts have been at all effective in dealing with them? Is it more carrots and sticks, or have there been sticks that have actually been effective and that should be maybe studied again as case studies for North Korea?
Yeah, well, in fact, I think the record shows that nothing has been effective in the context of past North Korean provocations. There's always this push to hold North Korea accountable for its actions. And generally speaking, it's hard to point to specific instances where, in fact, North Korea has been held accountable. And I think that situation may be it's even compounded by the fact that cyber is a new area, relatively speaking. You know, the issue of holding North Korea accountable, I mean, the human rights discussion at the UN, in fact, is an example of an effort to do that, and we'll see if it has effects on that issue or not.
And that was a long time in coming, since it routinely has had one of the worst human rights records in the world, and it was a sort of a painstaking process to get to even this point.
That's right, and frankly, China and Russia are on the Security Council. The recommendation for the Commission of Inquiry is to turn this over to the ICC, and I'd be very surprised if we got there to the ICC.
Thank you, Scott. Operator, I wanted to see if there's any more questions on the line.
Yes, the presider is welcome to continue the discussion.
Okay, well, I think we're actually going to conclude on that note, a sobering note, I guess, in terms of responses. But I do want to thank our two experts, Adam Siegel, CFR Senior Fellow for China Studies and author of the new Net Politics blog, and Scott Snyder, who's CFR Senior Fellow for Korea Studies and contributor to the Asia Unbound blog, for helping us navigate these issues and these kind of confounding problems involving cybersecurity and North Korea. This is a conclusion of a Council on Foreign Relations on the Record media call.
Thank you for listening to this Council on Foreign Relations podcast. For additional audio, video, and transcripts of CFR meetings, as well as expert analysis of international news, please visit us online, cfr.org.